The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. My guest this week is, for my money, one of the best cannabis journalists in the business, Jimmy Devine. Jimmy Devine is a journalist. He is based in California. First, let's get to this. Let's get to this piece that you just got published in the LA Weekly.
Well, I think, and this is how I started the story too. So I'm going to start it here the same way. When in the context of this conversation, it's important to remember that these dispensaries, in general, all the research points to that they make the neighborhoods they're in safer. But even with that generalized fact that's now proven, these giant piles of cash that dispensaries are forced to accrue for these quarterly tax payments are just too lucrative an opportunity for the criminal class in California. And that's what we're seeing as legalization has, even though the black market is three times larger than the legal market, as legalization has moved on and people feel like they're getting less money for their product, it's dark times. And a lot of these people who industry insiders, a lot of people have a deep understanding of how the security aspects of this industry works. And then furthermore, these operators are forced to file these in-depth security plans, which at any point in the you got to remember, the operators looking at it, their consultants are looking at it, the city's looking at it. There's a lot of places in various municipalities where you could see these springing a leak and the actual security information getting out if it's not public already. So that's the context that these operators are working in. And now in the recent months, as you know, the cannabis industry has always been a target, especially during the harvest season, which we're starting to enter into Croptober, as it's known. And but recently, these operators have been taking a serious hit. San Jose's had six people hit in the last few weeks. Sacramento's had a ton, even more. Two operators hit in the same night. One hit for $160,000+ cash tax payment. An actual safe was cracked in that one. So that's far beyond, stick up kids getting a big score. But that happened too. Some stick up kids in Oakland scored 20 pounds. So it's happening in so many different ways in so many different municipalities. It's a statewide problem, and a lot of people believe it's a banking access problem as well.
What are people doing to try and work through this?
Well, you know, I interviewed LAPD for the piece. They believe they're convinced people are using armored cars to transport their money and stuff like that. But there's only so much you can do. You have to pay your taxes. If you had merchant services, it's probably gotten shut down 1,000 times. And it's a tough situation. The real thing, the best thing people can do is contact their congressman to support things like the MORE Act, the Safe for Banking Act. It was actually interesting. I interviewed the Cannabis Caucus co-chair people, Rep. Lee from Oakland and Rep. Blumenauer from up your way. I asked them how important the banking access issue was right now to what they have going on. And especially in that time, I was asking them in context of equity programs, how important is it for the lowest tier operator to have access to the market? But the Cannabis Caucus is all in on banking. Like they're saying now they're putting their full weight behind the MORE Act, which they think is better than the Safe Banking Act. But regardless, now there's this chatter on Capitol Hill that something should pass by in October. So in some context, if something were to pass, I'm sure the mechanisms would be able, it's money's money, I'm sure they'd be able to create the mechanisms they needed rather quickly. So in this crime wave, it's actually interesting to think this might be the twilight of these kind of opportunities for the criminal class, because these cash piles aren't going to last much longer, it looks like. So, I doubt too many are thinking ahead like that, but it may be a reality of the situation.
Of course, if people could use credit cards at dispensaries, that would, boom, problem solved.
Amen. Amen. And then, you know, then those neighborhood safety statistics go by even further, because the only people taking a hit in the neighborhood is the dispensary. But per capita, that brings the crime rate up, even if the wider crime rate has been dropped by the dispensary's presence. So once you get rid of that aspect, it's going to be even wilder to see what the real data looks like from RAND and stuff like that in a few years. LAPD tracks burglaries and robberies as separate incidents, and I wasn't able to get the breakdown between legal retail operators and the most prolific black market in the world in Los Angeles. But there's still, you look at the data, there's still a ton of people getting robbed at dispensaries because they have to use cash, and it just is what it is.
Well, we'll be following this. We've been, of course, following this the whole time, but we'll continue, and hopefully we'll see some kind of a resolution. I mean, God knows we need it. So let's talk about some of the other stuff that you've been working on that's a little lighter. You're a cannabis correspondent as well.
Yeah, I'm one of the main guys in the world covering high-end genetics, like elite boutique stuff.
In fact, you're senior staff reporter.
I'm at Cannabis Now. I'm the senior staff writer at Cannabis Now, and then I'm pretty much a weekly contributor at LA Weekly, and then sometimes I'll have appearances on other, you know, reputable publications.
LA Weekly's pretty reputable. Not bad.
It's a great platform. I love it. It's been really cool. You know, it's like basically like, you know, I can imagine it'd be similar to writing about wine in Paris. You know what I mean? I live out with where all the dope weed is and get to cover, like, and the, you know, with all the problems that have come with the Adult Use of Marijuana Act's implementation, one thing for me as a journalist that's kind of simplified my life is the way the distribution system works. Like, I can find that weed, and I know where it's going all over the state. It's easier for me to track the best cannabis and tell people, hey, if you go, like, you know, out, you know, not because I'm getting paid to do it, because I'm hunting down these strains, I'm spending a lot of my own time and money trying to really find these best cuts, and then when I eventually find them, the way the system works now, it's a lot easier for me to tell people where to go get it, as opposed to, you know, pre-2016, where, you know, dudes were selling pounds and you don't know how long the pound was. It was a lot harder to track everything. It was a lot harder to pick things, because I wanted to make sure I picked things that people would actually have access to, and not something that was like under two lights in Billy's closet, you know?
Friends, just a reminder that I'm speaking with Jimmy Devine. He is a journalist currently based in California. Franklin Pierce College, New Hampshire. Are you still on SSDP's board, or have you?
No. I got off. I was on when I got out here. I moved out here in 2009, right after I graduated. Was off in 2010, and kind of got more involved in the local stuff. You know, ASA protests, stuff like that. When the big Harborside protest happened in Oakland, I was one of the volunteers there, like helping coordinate traffic and stuff. But then I also, like, there was a gap to, like, as I got my feet wet in the dispensary, because I came out here to work in the dispensary. I still work in the dispensary 6 days a week. But as I came out here to get my feet wet in the industry, and there was kind of a gap before I got my foot in the door in the media. Since I graduated in 2009, all the major newspapers so many major newspapers closed in 2008, and all these amazing writers were out there looking for work. So, you know, how was a kid to compete against that? But eventually, I got my foot in the door in the podcast world, selling advertisements, and then the podcast owner and host David Downs, Leafly's California chief, he was working with SF Gate at the time, and told SF Gate, "Hey, Jimmy knows the industry really well. You bring him on board." I got my shot, and here we are, 4 years later. It's been a wild ride. But SSDP was dope because it gave me the backbone for all this, like, to be able to covering this industry, being 33 years old, saying I've done it for 14 years, people kind of look at me like, what? Like, and so that's always fun. You know, a lot of people, there's so many now in the new industry, you always hear people talking about what they did before cannabis. And I'm just like, I went to prom. Like,
and that's what Jimmy, I love you. And I love your writing too. And I think that your experience as a drug policy reformer and doing all this stuff really does inform your work. And I love what you do, man. I love what you do.
It's great, and it's also the people. It was also a really helped me build trust with these growers, these legendary killers that didn't want to talk to anybody. They're like, "Oh, what would you, Jimmy? I was a normal kid that just an SSDP kid that moved out here to try and, you know, do it right." And everyone knows I'm nobody's cousin, I'm nobody's brother. Like, this whole industry is so deeply interconnected up here. You know what I'm saying? I'm a fair set of eyes. I've never anyone. I've had zero complaints about the strain list I've written over the last 3 years. The only complaint I get is, why wasn't I on it? You know? So it's like, I'm so I'm loving it. I called the Emerald Cup, something on the podium at the Emerald Cup the last 2 years in a row. I picked 5 strains every harvest. Like, keep an eye out for these. 2017, Rosé came in 2nd place, won the Breeders' Cup. I had it on my list 2 months earlier. And then last year, Cherry Pie came in 3rd place in one of the personal cultivation categories, and I had that on my list 2 months earlier. So I'm trying to triple up on the Emerald Cup this year, find that flame, you know, and it's good. It's a nice, when you're covering the depressing things like the crime stories, the failure to implement equity programs properly, and just, you know, all the road, when you're covering all the roadblocks, it kind of, you know, as far as the snowball has rolled down the hill, and I'm super thankful for how far the snowball is, sometimes there's these things that kind of just like irk you. And you hope like the system can figure it out. So when I have those days where I get to go just look at amazing cannabis with the world's best cultivators, and those are some of the people that treat me the best. Like, I was those are the people I hug. Like, thank you for what you do. it's awesome. I love it. I love covering strains. There's so many amazing people, and so many are working their way into the light or already there, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
So what kind of strains should I be looking at? I mean, obviously I live in Oregon, so we have a
You got some good cuts up there for sure. Well, in Oregon you've got a couple options, so this would be like my first picks. And if I were up that way, Green Bodhi, very fantastic cuts. Super good. I forget the name of the dispensary they're affiliated, but I know it's available up there. And then Benson Elvis. Benson Elvis was one of the best cultivators in California. They headed north post 2014 to get their, you know, start the process of being a legal cannabis company. They came back to California, crushed it. I saw they had some like 24K that was dope. I saw beautiful. And then now I'm seeing them. I guess they're back in Oregon again. So those guys are fire. But actual cuts, like the genetics that are getting me the most excited right now, I really like the stuff from Sea Junkie Genetics, the Wedding Cakes, the Animal Mints variants, the Kush Mints variants, like Animal Mints. The Sunday Driver is super good. The stuff from Canorado, they have a lot of beautiful cuts right now. God, the Village, of course, but and Vitologist, Symbiotic Genetics. Symbiotic Genetics came, like, they won everything at the last Great Chalice before everything fell apart. And, you know, the event scene. Oh, there's a whole nother tragic conversation. But, those are the strains that are really, like, and you get into some, like, there's different strains that are more exciting to smoke as like diamonds and sauce than flower. Like, because when you're smoking flower, you know, you're always going to get high. That's the whole point. But when you start talking about like the subtle flavor hints, and do you want something that's creamy like a gelato, or something that's a little bit more vapory, you know, the way it hits your lungs, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's a personal preference thing, but you know, I just try and smoke for every tax bracket and tell the truth. And so far, so good.
Well, especially for every tax bracket. I mean, a lot of I'll see these like, oh, this is fantastic. Oh, this is the most expensive thing you can find. It's like, yeah, no, just no. I mean, I've been a value shopper for too long.
Well,
if I can't even afford to look at the top shelf, I don't want to. But I would like to know something about the things that I could afford, you know?
But I hear you. Let me make this now. This is how I respond to that, and I totally get that. It's important to remember these boutique growers can only scale up so far and still be boutique. Eventually, it's going to be a supply and demand issue, and those guys are in a situation where they can keep raising the price until, because it's always like for those people that are first in line, because it is the flame, you know? But I hear you. But there's a lot of these guys doing, you know, slightly less nice things at a more wider capacity, and that's cool. And it's really a race to the bottom. Who's going to grow the best pot the cheapest the fastest? That's who's going to win.
you know, and that's the biggest spot in up your way, isn't it? Like the biggest spot in the States, the one that sells the value ounces, right? That's what I heard.
But we have a couple of places up here that advertise the $40 ounce, and then we have a lot of other ones where the lowest end is more like around 80 or 100, and even there too, it's like, okay, that's whatever. I'll just take whatever smells good. But something that's I'm not sure who will be the $2 chuck of weed. I guess that's the big question.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people trying right now, for sure. I see all these. And it's interesting to see the varying quality. Like, I saw a $15 half ounce in California that just was so dirt. It was like offensive. It was like, God, I wouldn't even tell someone to cook with it. Like, but on a more, hold on, let me say my favorite. So I meant to say a couple more strains that I know I need to make sure I give proper credit to.
Please.
Big strains this summer for me: Gelinade, Gelato 41 by Connected, crossed with Lemon Tree. Fantastic. That was so good. Alien Labs Area 41. That's the Gelato 41 crossed with their old school LA OG Kush cut. I think it goes by like Lemon Fuel, but it's just an old school LA OG Kush that's really dope. Mendo Breath is always like gassy phenotypes of Mendo Breath are always like super special for me. The Cherry Pie that I already mentioned, super special for me. God, and then, you know, and Skittles. Whenever you can get your hands on, like, the real Skittles from, like, Mendocino, there's a couple people in the Bay Area that do it well, particularly IC Collective and Craft Cannabis. Those are probably the two best versions of it I've seen outside of Mendocino. Yeah, whenever you can get your hands on that, that's the hype. It's hard to grow. It's super velvety. It's really, it's connoisseur weed that has to be grown by a connoisseur person that wants to smoke it themselves, because that's the only way it's going to be done. And so when you get it, it's a beautiful thing. And it's super exciting whenever, you know, you see these new phenotypes come down from these like mythical strains. And it takes a couple of years for these things to propagate enough for the masses to really see them, you know, get a little wind in their sails. So, you know, you'll hear about the new strain, you'll hear about the new seed drop, and then if you're lucky, a couple of years later, maybe it'll be available on shelves. Like right now, you see the Mac, the Miracle Alien Cookies. It's been hyped for a couple of years now, but now you're seeing it get to real production levels, blah blah blah, and it's so great.
Interesting. Some very cool stuff. Again, folks, speaking to journalist and cannabis connoisseur Jimmy Devine, based down there in California, writing for LA Weekly, writing for, is it Cannabis Now?
Yep.
Cannabis Now, writing for, and yeah, again, met him back when he was at Students for Sensible Drug Policy.
I think we met in 06 at Georgetown, we probably chatted at the Freedom Rally the year after. Because I
would have done that. And then I came up to Franklin Pierce for a regional conference that you guys
sponsored.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. That was ridiculous. Oh, man. We had so much
fun. That was fun. First time I'd ever been up in New Hampshire, and it really is a beautiful area. I'm from the Midwest, so.
And it was primary season, too. So that made it fun. It was like just at the end, like the conference ended up happening like right after the New Hampshire primary. So like my whole time in college was like the build up to the 08 election, and like learning journalism in that area at that time was super fun.
See, brilliant stuff. Hey, you mentioned the election back then. I got to ask you, what do you think we're looking at for this circus coming up next year?
Well, full disclosure, I worked the door at Bernie Sanders in San Francisco 2 weeks ago, so I'm fairly biased on this. But weed-wise, I think the biggest I think Florida is going to legalize. I think now that they have the whole team back together, because first, like, what happened was like the medical. God, I'm so bad. I cover the whole country, so sometimes I'm bad with names. John Morgan, right?
John Morgan is the one.
Yes, that's the one. Oh, thank God. So the way the Florida legalization started was some of John Morgan's homies that he worked with on medical were like, well, let's get this conversation going, and started working on language a couple years ago, so on and so forth. And you know, they got the petitions, they hit that threshold that requires the Florida Supreme Court to take a look at the petition. And not long after that, John came on board. So once John, because it was already, the ball was already rolling, and I was like, oh man, if they could make it over a few more thresholds, and the industry saw that it was real, like why wouldn't they back it? It's the people, you know, it's the same people that helped them open the dispensaries. But then when John, the figurehead of medical marijuana the face of medical marijuana in Florida, came on board, and that changed everything. Because John is like a, you know, he is a, you know, a lot of people in Florida looking, when they listen to John speak, they feel that they're listening to like, you know, a public servant speak, even though he's like a private practice lawyer, blah, 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 all that. Like he really, you can hear the conviction in his voice, like when he speaks about the patients. So with that, with John coming on board, and just, he kind of posted a tweet that was just like, oh, you know, I'm, you know, why not? Like, I'm in full support. And it was, it changed the game in Florida. So 2020 legalization Florida looks like it's going to be serious. And there's other stuff going on, but that's the one I think that's going to like make the most waves.
While we still have a few minutes, vape carts, oil,
yeah,
all this stuff happening. What are you seeing? What are you hearing down there in Cali? How are consumers reacting? As far as these illnesses,
it's crazy because like the underground sesh scene, like when it really, because now we're at 6 fatalities as of today, wild, but it's so. Let me preface this with just the coverage, the media coverage, wider media coverage. I think the wider media coverage has not separated the legal market enough from the what's happening with these people supposedly using Honeycut, which allegedly contains vitamin E, but that's generally what people are saying is happening. So these producers are getting pulled under the thrown under the bus with these, you know, at this point. You got to remember, there was a time, just like it took time for the wind to get in the sails of like those strains I mentioned, it took time for people to find out what was happening with this Honeycut stuff. So I'm sure there are some producers out there that thought they were just going to stretch their product, make an extra buck, had no ill will or intention to make anybody sick. And once word got out what was happening, they stopped. There's those people. But now I was like, what about the people? I worry like about the people who heard about it and didn't stop doing it. You know what I mean? Like now they're at this wave of national media. You turn on CNN at 8:30 a.m. and it's about the vape crisis. I would imagine those black market producers that were messing around in the dirtiest of stuff don't. What's going to happen to these people? We don't know. They might make a bill. There might be a crime bill about this. You know? We don't. Some heads are going to roll for this for sure. For sure. So. It's crazy to see just like how heinous this is. There's somewhere between stupidity and heinousness, and it's just so sad. That's where it all falls in. Every time somebody poured Honeycut into their product to make more of it, to stretch, to keep the viscosity and not lose any THC value, it fell somewhere between being an idiot and being an asshole, and, you know, somewhere in the middle.
The Washington Post is reporting today that the state of New York is subpoenaing three different companies: Honeycut Labs of Santa Monica for its Honeycut diluting agent, Floraplex Terpenes in Ypsilanti, Michigan for its Uber Thick agent, and the other one is Mass Terpenes in Amherst, Massachusetts for its Pure Diluent.
Yeah, that sounds, you know, it was wild because so much stuff happened on Friday. Friday was a big day for this. The CDC dropped an announcement. They released the preliminary results of their investigation that's been going since August 1st and found there was no infectious diseases associated with it. So it must be some type of it must be from being exposed to chemicals. In the same afternoon, the LA County Health Department announced the first death in Los Angeles. And it's been, you know, honestly, people have been dropping. It seems like someone's dropping every day since. it's wild. It's wild. And just every, it's, I feel like every, well, maybe not every day, but every news cycle, like every, like in the, over the last week, it feels like there's another one, and it's wild. And I, and like I said, I feel like I spoke to some of the world's best cartridge, legal cartridge manufacturers. I spoke to for a piece for LA Weekly that hasn't dropped yet. I spoke with Raw Garden. I spoke with Field. Field won the Emerald Cup. Field won the Secret Cup. Field won the Cannabis Cup. And if it's a bad PR, if it's a PR situation for that guy, you know, it's a PR situation for everyone. If like the most legit names, if they're being hit by this, then how can the more middle of the pack people not be, you know?
Again, it's a sad situation, and condolences to all the families and friends of those who've died or been affected by all this.
They're putting a lot of resources into it. The FDA, CDC, everyone's going, working very hard with local officials to try and figure it out. And but like I said, now that the word is out, we can only hope that these illicit operators are not using this stuff anymore. It's sad, and it's crazy because there's another, even within the regulated operators, and then these illicit operators. There's a third group of underground illicit operators that knew what they were doing and still know what they're doing, but they just had the bar set too high for them in California. Like, it was just a little bit, there was a little bit out of their reach. So they took their skill set that would be totally acceptable in the regulated market that they couldn't afford to get into, to the underground market. And those people are getting, those other guys that are making underground cartridges that are like, but they're safe. Like, you know, God, those guys are, that's who's having the most sleepless nights, for sure.
Well, hey, we're coming up to the end of the show. Again, folks, I've been speaking with Jimmy Devine, journalist in California, writer with Cannabis Now, with LA Weekly, a former SSDP, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, activist, chapter leader, board member, and a good friend, and a great writer. Give folks your social media so they can follow you, and any website that they should know about.
For sure. At Jimmy Devine, JIMIDEVINE, and then JimmyDevine.com. And then, I'm pretty active on Instagram, too. Just throw the Jimmy Devine there. But otherwise, it's Jimmy Devine on everything. Shout-outs to you, Doug. Thanks for having me. Super fun time. Always love talking shop.
Jimmy, you take care, man. And now I'll just keep on looking for your byline.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. Yeah, and because I write for so many different people. If you're I tell the people that really want to creep on me, my Muckrack page is good because it gets everyone.
I subscribe to Muckrack, so I will. Of course, everyone.
That's the spirit. Thank you again, and keep crushing with the show. Okay.
All right, brother. Thank you. Well, folks, that's it for this week. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. The Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. Drug War Facts has a Facebook page too. Give it a like. Share it with friends. Remember, knowledge is power. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.